T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
You're listening to The Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Sneaky Joe DiBiase on WGR Sports Radio 550.
That music means it's part two of The Extra Point Show now, where Sal and I will co-host for the next hour here on WGR.
Yeah, it's like Extra Point Thunder here today.
Extra Point Thunder. 10 to 3. I'll be with Sal for the next hour, and Sal will take you solo the rest of the way from 1 to 3 here on WGR, leading up to Shope and the Bulldog. We now are joined on the Wester Hotline by Evan Lazar, Patriots beat reporter and host of the Patriots Beat podcast. Evan, thanks for joining us on it's Memorial Day weekend, right? It's Friday.
Yeah.
We can say this Memorial Day weekend.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
What do you got going on this weekend? Anything special up in the Boston area?
Not much. We got OTAs on Tuesday, so can't go much. Too far away. So we'll hit the beach and do some things, but it'll be fun.
So the biggest story, right, Evan, so far with the Patriots is still that they don't really know, or we don't really know, who's going to call plays for them. There's no official offensive coordinator. It's getting a lot of national publicity, too. We got ESPN on in the background in here, and once a day for the last week, I feel like I've seen something related to that storyline get shown on one of their TV shows. Is it being made too much of that they don't have a guy that we know of yet that's going to be calling plays?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, this is not completely unprecedented for Bill Belichick by any means. When Charlie Weiss left in 2004 to coach Notre Dame, Josh McDaniels wasn't the official OC until 2 years later. When McDaniels left the first time to coach the Broncos, Billy O'Brien wasn't the offensive coordinator for 3 years later. So they're a titleless organization. Bill Belichick has always been somebody that makes you earn it, that wants you to put in the dirty work, and doesn't want you to fixate so much on your title or your rank in the organization, but more so on the work itself. So the actual titles of it all is not an unprecedented thing. I think what is unprecedented, though, is that over the last 20-plus years with Belichick, they've always had an internal candidate take the responsibility. I just mentioned the Weiss to McDaniels and the McDaniels to O'Brien sequence. Those guys were always the guys that were here beforehand. They were on the offensive side of the football. They grew up in the Patriots dynamic, and then they were promoted up the ranks. Now, with the Patriots now, Joe Judge and Matt Patricia were once upon a time in the Patriots organization, obviously, but they went away, they came back, and now instead of promoting guys like Troy Brown or their tight ends coach Nick Cayley to these responsibilities, they are going with retreads, essentially, at those jobs. So I guess if Joe Judge had always stayed here in New England, then maybe this wouldn't have been that big of a deal. It would have been a little bit more like McDaniels and Bill O'Brien. But I think your concern is about the pipeline and the fact that Bill Belichick is going with two retreads here that left the organization versus just promoting from within and having the next young Josh McDaniels take over the play calling.
It's a good point about the familiarity with these guys coming back, no doubt, Evan. But it does seem, and tell me, is this right? It seems like there's just more general turnover in that organization, coaching, front office, than there has been throughout the last couple of decades.
Yeah, look, they've lost a lot of brain drain over the last four or five years, I would even say, going back to when Brian Flores left after they won the Super Bowl to Miami and things like that. And you look at organizationally, I think one of the most underrated or two of the most underrated figures in the dynasty are Ernie Adams and Dante Scarnecchia. Ernie Adams is Bill Belichick's right-hand man. No one's exactly sure what he did with the Patriots, but it was important. I can tell you that. A lot of advanced scouting and that sort of thing in terms of looking into opponents and tendencies. And he was analytics before analytics was a popular topic, a trendy thing to do. So Ernie Adams retired a few years ago. That one was big. Dante Scarnecchia retired 2 years ago. Longtime Patriots offensive line coach, an absolute legend. Might be a Hall of Famer someday just for his contributions to football. And both those guys retiring, rightfully so, after so many years in the organization and working in football, is a underrated thing that I don't think gets talked about enough in terms of the turnover of the brain trust, you know, and then Nick Caserio leads the front office and Dave Ziegler leads the front office. So it's been a lot of turnover and a lot has fallen on the plate of Bill Belichick. And now it's sort of his gig, as it's always been, but maybe even more so because he doesn't have guys like Ernie and like Scar that he's trusted for so long.
You know, the retiring coaches maybe is what kind of sparked this in me, but now that Josh McDaniels is gone too, like, is there any sign to you that we're nearing the end for Bill Belichick and when he would retire and call it quits? Because I know history would tell you that. I think there's only been three coaches ever that have coached multiple years in their 70s. Now I believe it's three because Pete Carroll is on that list. Like, is there any indication of when Belichick thinks he's going to coach until?
Well, he is 70, so he's getting up there, right? And I think that you're talking more now about a short-term window, certainly, than anything in the long term. I don't think that Bill Belichick's making any moves with the 10-year plan in mind anymore. But I would say that he hasn't slowed down one bit. You see him out there at OTAs on Monday, and the guy is right in the trenches where he always is, you know, coaching, leading, all those types of things. And he doesn't look like somebody that's slowing down anytime soon. So I still think that they have another, I would say, conservatively 3 years with Bill Belichick as the head coach. I just wonder, and I think the biggest concern here in New England is who's the next guy in line and who's sort of the younger guys that are going to take on more responsibility now that they've lost so many coaches and they've lost McDaniels. Who's the next guy in line? I think a lot of Patriots fans are really worried and concerned that Matt Patricia is who they're trying to groom as the next head coach of the Patriots. And if that's the guy that's going to take over for Bill Belichick, then it could be a long couple of years once Belichick retires.
We started the segment with Joe, you know, asking you about the plan of the reaction, I should say, and the wondering of what's going on. If there's too much made of what's going on the coaching staff, I'll ask you it. Is there too much made of the draft and people, the Cole Strange pick, and then, you know, just even subsequent picks and Thornton and people maybe going overboard? Has that been the case, do you think, of the reaction to the draft, which was, I think, mostly unfavorable for the Patriots, but you do have people out there who liked it?
Yeah, it's funny because the positions that they drafted were not out of left field. It wasn't like they took a quarterback, right, or something like that, where we're all like, why the heck did they take a quarterback? But Cole Strange and Tyquan Thornton, I always say this, if you replace those guys' names with Zion Johnson and John Mechie, then all Patriots fans would be thrilled with the draft, right? So it's not necessarily that they took a lineman and a wide receiver. Those were two clear needs. But once again, the Patriots beat to their own drum. They have their own board. They rank prospects differently than everybody else ranks prospects. And they went with their scouting. They trusted their scouting and their department about the way that they stacked that board. And unfortunately, with the things like the draft, we'll see, right? Like, we'll see in 3 years if who ends up being right. But given their recent track record, when they have gone a little bit against the grain and against conventional wisdom recently, it hasn't necessarily worked out for them. And I think N'Keal Harry is the big pick that people point to. A lot of people higher on A.J. Brown, Deebo Samuel, D.K. Metcalf going into that draft. And the Patriots took N'Keal Harry, and we know how that went for the Patriots. So the concern that I have with it is recent years have shown us with the Patriots that when they go more chalk in the draft, like when they take Mac Jones at 15 and when they take Christian Barmore in the second round, That draft last year was a home run for the Patriots in all three of the first rounds, really. All four rounds, if you want to include Ramondre Stevenson, that running back in that mix. That's Alabama, Alabama, Oklahoma, Oklahoma were their first four picks last year. And then they come out this year and they're drafting guys from Chattanooga and Houston and all over the place. And San Diego State with Pierre Strong, or South Dakota State, excuse me, with Pierre Strong. So that's the concern, is, you know, why change up what worked for you last year when you went with the blue blood programs and you went with the big name brands, and now this year you're pulling names out of the hat again? It is concerning to see that different type of approach.
So we've mentioned Tyquan Thornton, who they picked in the second round. They trade for Devontae Parker. Does it feel like to you they've done enough at the skill positions this year, that Mac Jones has enough around him to progress from year one to year two? Does it feel like he's got the infrastructure? And I guess the coaching that we've already talked about could play into this, but the O-line and the skill positions I'm thinking about more so here, is there enough around him to take that step from year one to year two?
I think there is, and maybe this is a little bit of us judging it against the more recent Patriots skill position group and supporting cast, but this team right now, in terms of wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, they have a lot of depth there at those three positions that over the last couple of years, 19, 20 in particular, they just didn't have this level of talent at wide receiver in particular. So is it the greatest or the best wide receiver room in football? Absolutely not. Do they have a Stephon Diggs? No, they don't have that top guy. But they do have really good depth one through five. They do have guys that can do different things and contribute in different ways. They have the speedsters with Aguilar and Tyquan Thornton. They have the bigger receiver in Parker. They have those possession receivers with Bourne and Myers. So they have a combination that I like. They don't have that top dog, and I guess that's going to be sort of the game plan, is to spread the ball around to the depth of this receiving group and attack matchups and try to find favorable situations where maybe their third receiver against the opponent's third corner is a mismatch, and that's something that they can attack. But I like the way that they're headed at that group, especially if they can finally hit on one of these wide receivers in the draft and Tyquan Thornton ends up being a good player, then they're much more talented in the pass-catching group than they were over the last couple of years, certainly. They've done a nice job of building out a tight end and wide receiver in particular.
Evan Lazar joining us on the West Her Hotline. What about on defense, Evan? I think that there was a clear, you know, edict maybe to get faster for the Patriots. You could see their linebacking core was a bit slower. That was exposed a bit in the couple of games they played in the Bills towards the end of the season. But also losing J.C. Jackson, how about the secondary? The speed and the secondary overall in the defense and where that stands?
Yeah, right now as things sit here on Memorial Day weekend, I can tell you that the offense on paper, how it's going to fill out, who's going to play where, and it looks pretty solid, and there's a lot of carryover too in a lot of places, especially at wide receiver and tight end, from what they did last year and running back too. So a lot of their offense is kind of figured out. The defense, on the other hand, that's where I have more question marks or sort of unanswered propositions about who's going to play where and who's going to be the playmakers in certain spots. And you mentioned the speed in the front seven. They're certainly trying to go younger and faster. I would put out the younger part as well. Josh Uche finally getting a chance, a second round pick that they drafted out of Michigan. Cameron McGrone, another Michigan guy that they drafted last year, that was basically a redshirt guy because he tore his ACL towards the end of the college football season going into the draft. They're really high on both of those players. They're certainly a lot faster and explosive and more new age than, let's say, Dante Hightower or Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins. So they're going in a different direction. And in a lot of ways, I think in the front seven, you can look at it as addition by subtraction. And maybe there's a chance that the younger players are better off than maybe some of the old guard. But in the secondary, you do have a lot of concerns. Obviously, you guys know that the Patriots gave up 47 points against Buffalo and didn't force a punt for basically two straight games against the Bills at the end of last season. And their biggest offseason additions are two rookies at corner. They bring back Malcolm Butler, who was retired last year. You know, Stephon Gilmore is not here anymore. J.C. Jackson's not here anymore. So when I look at how they match up against Buffalo in the secondary, that is concerning. And I would say that that's easily the biggest question mark going into the season roster-wise for them, is do they have the horses at cornerback to keep up not just with Buffalo, but also with Miami now, and even New York, who had Garrett Wilson in the draft and Elijah Moore and some of their playmakers too. It's the biggest concern on the team for me moving forward is how this defense is going to come together.
What is expectation like there? Is because of Belichick's age and some of the moves they've made, you would think that they're trying to win right now, obviously. But do fans reasonably expect them to compete for a Super Bowl? Is it just make the playoffs and we're good? Like, what is expectation level for New England this year?
Yeah, look, I reasonable fans do not expect them to compete for a Super Bowl unless we see an absolutely significant jump from Mac Jones. Like, Mac Jones is going to have to go from an average quarterback last year to an MVP candidate if the Patriots are going to have a chance to make a run at a Super Bowl. And I think right now, in terms of me covering the team, this is my fifth year now covering the team, but I've obviously, you know, watched the team and grew up in New England, so I've been around the team for 20 plus years. This is as uncertain or as shaky ground as the Patriots have ever been on, I would say, since Bill Belichick took over, maybe besides like going all the way back to the 2000 season when they were 5-11. You know, this is a murky kind of crossroads for them right now as an organization. In one hand, you want to give Belichick the benefit of the doubt and think that he's going to steer the ship in the right direction, but we've also seen that a lot of these all-time great coaches at this point in their career, when some of their trusted players and confidants retire or move on and Tom Brady moves on, that they flame out. Like, quite frankly, they just flame out, right? And they never get back up to the top of the mountain. And I think there is legitimate concern here in New England that this team might never get back up to the top of the mountain with Bill Belichick. And that's nothing to do with Bill necessarily. It's just, you know, the clock ran out, right? You know, it's just kind of time. So we'll see what ends up happening. I think there is a chance that could go in a positive direction, but I don't think anybody here, realistically has any Super Bowl aspirations for the team this year. And we're really still looking at maybe that wild card weekend, earning a wild card berth, and hopefully being a little bit more competitive in the wild card game.
I have a non-Patriots question for Evan, but if you have another one, Joe, you can go ahead
before
I do that. I want to ask you about the Celtics, man. You're right there in Boston, Eastern Conference. I don't know if you're a Celtics fan, you could tell us, but I mean, how is the city reacting to this run by this team?
Huge Celtics fan. I'm actually going to Game 6 tonight.
Nice.
So I'm really excited about that. And this is Celtics fever right now here in Boston. I think we're all really just pumped up that this team with Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart have finally hit their stride, it seems. I think we all knew that those three guys, and Tatum especially, were extremely talented players, right? They hadn't been able to put it all together in the postseason, and they were still a little bit young over the last couple of years to take that next step, and they kept on getting knocked out by KD and Giannis and, you know, all these great players in the East. And now finally it does feel a little bit like it's their turn. So it's great to see the development of this team. It's really remarkable to think about, you know, how quickly some of these guys have grown up, and right before our eyes now, Jason Tatum's all NBA first teamer and one win away from the finals. So it's really fun to watch. And this is definitely Celtics fever right now in town. There's a bunch of Celtics green all around Boston.
I hope so badly to get Celtics, and I think we'll get it, Celtics-Warriors in the finals, just for how intriguing of a matchup. I mean, Evan, you know, like, when they have Horford, Robert Williams, Tatum, and Jaylen Brown on the floor at the same time, they are just so huge and so good defensively, and Marcus Smart, obviously, too, Defensive Player of the Year. And then the Warriors, who they love to play small ball with the three-pointers, like, they haven't really faced that, really, this playoff run. Because, like, right, Miami is more physical and Jimmy Butler trying to run to the hoop and just get free throws. Just for what the matchup would look like, I really hope we get Celtics-Warriors.
Yeah, honestly, the Celtics, I don't want to get ahead of myself because they've blown 3-2 series leads in the conference finals before. So they got to finish off Miami. Yeah. But the Celtics, they match up pretty well against the Warriors. And over the last couple of years, even when the Warriors were at their absolute peak, the Celtics have played Golden State really, really tough because they're a good defensive team. They're long. Like you mentioned, Marcus Smart, he can really get into Steph Curry and give him some problems. as much as anybody can possibly give that guy problems. But his physicality and his ability to stay with Steph Curry definitely is a big-time factor every time they play the Warriors. And, you know, Steph is a finesse player, and Marcus Smart is a hard-nosed, you know, in-your-face type of defender. And that can bode really well for the Celtics. So, yeah, I don't hate the matchup with Golden State. Now, you know, you don't have the best player in the series. Obviously, Steph would be the best player in the series. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. You don't have home court, so that's another. But I like the way schematically that they match up against Golden State. But, yeah, we got to get there first. They're still got to knock off Miami. But it looks like they should be able to take care of business here tonight.
You know, Evan, I grew up a Lakers fan because in Buffalo, like, we didn't have a team. I mean, the Braves left when I was super young, so I didn't know them. And every week on TV in the early 80s was either the Celtics, the Lakers, maybe the Sixers or Hawks. So I gravitated to the Showtime Lakers, and I just hated the Celtics growing up. But I got to tell you, man, it's hard to – I like these guys, though. I like the guys on the Celtics team. I like this group of individuals. In Buffalo, we can never really root for a Boston team, all right? If it's in hockey especially. I know we have some Red Sox fans here, but it's hard. This seems like a good group of guys, though.
It's a really fun team to watch, and they have a bunch of really young, up-and-coming players like Tatum and Brown in particular. Those two guys are killers. Marcus Smart sets the tone. Al Horford is your veteran, savvy cousin. Even a guy like Robert Williams, who you mentioned, he's that classic rim-running, you know, alley-ooping center that just jumps right through the gym and has big-time athleticism. So it's a fun group, and I think the one thing that they've struggled with over the past is mental toughness and bouncing back from losses, and they can sometimes get down in the dumps in-game, and the opponent will go on like a 20-0 run or something like that and put them behind the eight ball. But they've actually not lost two games in a row in the playoffs so far. They've won every single game following a loss, and they've shown a lot more resilience this playoff run, and they came back down 3-2 against Milwaukee, won Game 6 in Milwaukee. Jason Tatum scored 46 points in that game, and they won that game in Milwaukee in Giannis' home gym. Then they come back and blow him out in Game 7. The Celtics 3 years ago don't do that, you know? So it does feel a little bit different for the Celtics this time around. And, of course, I'll say all this, and then they'll drop the next two to Miami. But it does right. feel different.
Well, they are an 8.5-point favorite tonight, so you have a pretty good chance. All right, Evan, thanks for being so gracious with your time. Have fun at the game tonight. That's probably going to be an awesome game,
man,
to be at.
Very cool.
And maybe we'll catch up again before the start of the regular season.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Evan Lazar on the West Hur Hotline. Yeah, the Celtics are an 8.5-point favorite.
So I looked before we came on the air about the odds if they were to face the Warriors. They're closer to even. Mm-hmm. Like, the Celtics are +200. I'm sorry. The Warriors are...
-200?
The Warriors are -200 if they face the Heat. They're only -130 if they face the Celtics. It's a big difference.
That's a huge difference.
Right. So it's a slight edge, Warriors over Celtics. It's a big edge, Warriors over Heat.
It's also...
But they're the favorite either way.
Yeah. They should be. They are... They're very reminiscent of what they were at the beginning of their dynasty, before Durant, where most of the offense and most of the team ran through Steph and Klay. Draymond was your leader on defense, mm-hmm. and just like your captain, by all accounts. And then you had other scorers that were really good. They weren't superstars, but like Harrison Barnes. Remember the original Warriors team that won the championship was like really good.
That's right.
And now that's Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole. Like, they have two of them. The other thing, Sal, that's happened here is this is maybe headed for an NBA Finals that is kind of rare in today's game, in that there's no super team. There's no super team because there really isn't one right now, but also two teams that are kind of homegrown. It's not just, Kawhi Leonard decided to go here, so now they're an NBA Final team. The Durant decided to go here, so now they're NBA. No, like, the Celtics drafted and developed basically their whole team, and the Warriors did it, obviously, 10 years ago. So it's very natural, these two teams getting to the finals.
And I read someone make a point about Steph doing it before KD, and then with KD, and now post KD. Like, if he does this,
mm-hmm.
he's...
Greatest point guard of all time?
Is he... What I read, someone said he's got to be considered one of the top 10 players ever, if this happens.
I think, yes.
Right? Is that true?
I think so. I might put him in there already.
Maybe.
I mean,
with the records, the way the game is played, I think you always have to consider the game is different, but he was part of the reason that it is played differently now.
Exactly.
A big reason.
Right. Because
transcendent.
He, I mean, there are, I'm sure, kids around the
yes.
country that are maybe even playing in the NBA now that are better three-point shooters because they watch Steph Curry, who was not this physical freak like LeBron James, just, you know, 6 foot, 180 pounds, just kind of a normal size guy. He's tall. He's definitely tall, taller than me by 4 inches, but not like a physical freak, that he's one of the best of all time
yep.
based on a skill that he developed. And I think he is a large reason why the game has changed, because the game, when he showed up, had not changed yet.
That's right.
Like, it changed with him and Clay.
It changed with in their system and how they wanted to do it, and it was innovative.
And then people started copying it.
And it's still working.
It is still working. I think top 10 player of all time, for sure. And I think he would be in the discussion as the greatest point guard of all time.
So we just went through the Patriots with Evan. When we come back, I got a question for you, Joe, about the Patriots roster versus the Bills roster. I want to put you to the test a little bit.
All right, love
okay?
it.
All right.
It's coming up next here, Extra Point Show.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We want to stay healthy. I think that's important. We want to get healthier than where we are right now as well. And as I mentioned earlier, some players going through a couple things. And then I think the chemistry is big. You know, a chemistry of just getting to know one another, building that trust that needs to be there, because there are new pieces to it, as well as the coach-player relationship amongst the new pieces that we have in the coaching staff as well. So all of that is important, that gelling of the team this time of year.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott earlier in the week at Bills OTAs, which are ongoing this week. Joe DiBiase, Sal Capaccio. I'll be here through to 1 o'clock. Sal will take you solo from 1 to 3. You said you had a Patriots question?
I do. I do have a Patriots question. I'm doing this right now. I'm actually tweeting it on the Extra Point Show page.
Okay.
All right? I'm tweeting out the Patriots unofficial depth chart via Our Lads.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, what position, if you do plural, are they better than the Bills? What position, if any, are the Patriots currently better than the Bills? Running back, maybe? Do you even want to go there? I mean, they are loaded with running backs, but are they better than the Bills? Here are their running backs. Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, Pierre Strong Jr., James White, Kevin Harris, and J.J. Taylor. I could make an argument they are, but I don't think it's... I think it's an argument.
For me, it would be on par. I think Devin Singletary and Damian Harris are pretty close. I think Ramondre Stevenson is kind of close to those two, but what's the point? You know, what's the point of having four guys that are all pretty good? Like, two guys that are pretty good, if the Bills get that out of James Cook, that's fine. And I think Cook has the highest ceiling of any of these guys because of his speed and his contact balance and his vision and the pass-catching ability. So I would maybe say it's a wash for me at running back. I wouldn't even give them running back.
We know it's not quarterback. The whole room, starter, doesn't matter. But wide receiver, they have a lot of good, like, 2-3 guys, like number two, number three receivers that would be in most teams. Yeah. I don't think the Bills necessarily have that depth at the very bottom, but the Bills have the best two. If you were to draft, let's do it this way. If you were to take the Bills receivers and Patriots receivers and just have a draft, the top two are Diggs and Davis, right?
Top two are Diggs and Davis.
They're not. You're not getting to Parker or Bourne or Aguilar before Diggs.
Would they be before anybody else
in the Bills?
That draft would start at the third pick. It would be easily Diggs one, Davis two, and then I might take Devontae Parker three.
Maybe.
But, it would be a debate.
Probably.
It would be a debate. Jacoby Myers, too, like, good slot receiver, but how much better is he than Jameson Crowder? Like, it's pretty close.
And as you go through their depth chart, you could say, okay, maybe their 5 and 6 guy are better than the Bills' 6 or 7. I don't know. It's tough there, but certainly at the top of the chart, the Bills would have the better one. I think you could make a good case either way for offensive line. They don't have Shaq Mason anymore.
Right.
However, and they did draft Cole Strange, who projects to be a starter at guard, and everybody's kind of making fun of the pick, but he's going to be able to play in this league. David Andrews is an excellent center. I think so is Mitch Morse, however.
Isaiah Wynn is a good left tackle.
Trent Brown is a very, very good player. I think offensive line is close.
I might give them a slight edge on offensive line. If we made it a whole unit, I would probably give them a slight edge. But it's not a blowout. I'd go Patriots, but it's close. And then tight end might be close for me. Henry versus Knox, and then Jonnu Smith versus O.J. Howard, who are both athletic tight ends that you've maybe wanted more out of throughout their careers. So I would go tight end as a wash, running back as a wash, and then O-line, I think I might give a slight edge to New England.
So
everything else might be Bills.
So tight end, what's crazy is it should be the Patriots.
It should be. Because they're paying like the most for anyone in the league.
And the way you think of these guys, if I had given you this exact same question a year ago before we saw it play out in 2021, I think you'd say, okay, Patriots. Then we see it play out the way they didn't use their tight ends and weren't as effective. And the way Dawson Knox had his explosion and then O.J. Howard comes in, I think it absolutely is close. Let's go to the D-line. Now, they run a 3-4. According to the depth chart I put out, it's a 3-4. They have a very good defensive line. Dietrich Weiss Jr., Christian Barmore, who I like a lot, Lawrence Guy, very good. Is that better than Von Miller, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, and, I don't know, Jordan Phillips, whoever you put there?
I would say no.
I don't think so.
By the way, real quick on tight end.
Yeah.
We said it's about the same.
Yeah.
The Bills are spending $8.1 million at tight end this season on their cap. New England, $31.8 million. $31.8 million on those tight ends.
And the Bills are doing what?
8.1.
Amazing.
I would give the Bills the edge on the defensive line, though. Especially now with Von Miller. It might have been close before, because Judon is good. Judon is very good.
And Judon's considered a linebacker, but let's make him a pass rusher. Let's make him Von Miller. Let's do it. Let's play a 4-3.
Yeah.
Let's make him Von Miller. He bridges the gap a little. He doesn't close it, though.
No, because Von Miller, I would rather Von Miller.
Right.
So I would give the edge of the Bills.
Now, if you do that, you could massage how you want to do their linebacking core. There's no way.
Inside linebackers would be Jawan Bentley and Mack Wilson.
Who they traded for from Cleveland?
More than
Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds?
Edmonds and Milano,
all day. And I know Edmonds is polarizing. I understand that, but come on.
Yeah.
Right? Let's go corners. Very big. I'm assuming in a healthy Tre'Davious White here, obviously, right? Let's just say a healthy Tre'Davious White against him and I guess Kyer Elam.
Plus Dane Jackson, just as a trio. Well, Taron Johnson, too, should matter to
that. Yes, he does. Of course he does. Slot receiver, slot corner, right? Against Jalen Mills, Jonathan Jones.
And Malcolm Butler.
And then two rookies right behind them, by the way.
Yeah, and then Malcolm Butler.
And Malcolm Butler?
Bills.
Easily,
sure.
Easily Bills.
Yep.
I think they have a better punter as it is.
Yep.
Because we don't know the status of what's going on with the Bills punter. And even if you think Matt Araiza is going to win the job and be good, I think you still have to me, give it to Jake Bailey. But
even the positions where the Patriots are theoretically good, like safety, like Devin McCourty, Jabril Peppers, and Adrian Phillips. That's a good safety combo right there.
Yeah.
Especially adding Peppers. The Bills are still better there.
I didn't even talk about safety because
Poyer
you're right.
Poyer and Hyde, right? Like, it's assumed, of course.
Right.
Poyer and Hyde, all pro safeties. So, yeah, like, that's the that's, I think, the key here, is even the positions New England is good at, that's why the Bills are Super Bowl favorite. They have no positions where they're not at least decent.
That's a good point you make. Think about this. If you were to rank the Patriots positions, remember I did this one day and said, oh, where?
With the Bills.
All right, if you did that for the Patriots, safety would be near the top for them. But yet their safeties aren't as good as the Bills' safeties.
Yep, exactly right.
Their best position group is arguably safety. Maybe not. It's right up there. But yet their best position group is not better than the Bills' safeties.
They are not.
If it's safeties.
They are not near a complete roster. They have holes everywhere. And like even the offensive line we mentioned is like a strength of theirs. If Cole Strange shows up, it would not surprise many draft pundits if Cole Strange showed up and just could not play. Like beginning of his career, they just couldn't have him out there. I mean, there were clips of him at the Senior Bowl where he is getting bullied by guys that went in the fifth round. If Cole Strange shows up and can't play guard for them at the beginning, because he was a third round prospect. All right, suddenly the one position, the one unit we thought you were pretty good, suddenly you got a massive gaping hole in the middle.
You know what this exercise does for me? I mean, if you thought, the big bad mystique of the Patriots, right? Bill Belichick, he's going to do, he's a genius. Oh, he's going off script. He knows something everybody else doesn't know. Yeah, Mac, they got good play out of Mac Jones, rookie that made the playoffs last year. Listen, if you want to feel good and better at least about, calm down a little bit, just go do this exercise. Go look at the Patriots roster. Go look at the Bills roster. Compare the two. It is arguably that every single position the Bills are better. Arguably. And even if you just pick out a few, you'd have to struggle in a lot of ways to get there.
This is why the Dolphins, I think, are better than the Patriots. I'm going off the top of my head. I would give the Dolphins wide receiver. It's only one position, and even that's not a blowout. But I would give the Dolphins wide receiver.
Here's the Dolphins wide receivers. Oh, yeah. Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle would be picked probably before any of those receivers on the Patriots.
Oh, for sure.
If you did a wide receiver draft. Now, they don't have... I am a big Preston Williams fan, but he's had some injuries and whatever.
Yep. And then Cedric Wilson in Dallas was a good player, but not a great player.
Right.
I would give them the advantage. It would be close. Again, I'm not saying it's
like
a blowout.
I do like Cedric Wilson, but yeah.
Because to me, Diggs and Tyreek Hill are a wash. They're both top five elite wide receivers in the sport. And I would put Waddle above Gabriel Davis. As much as I like Gabriel Davis, I think Jaylen Waddle is special.
Wow.
So that would be the give that would put Miami over Buffalo for me. But even as I'm saying this...
Two totally different positions, though, really, in players. Waddle's a slot guy.
I don't know that he... It doesn't sound like he's going to play the slot
this
year,
yeah,
though.
That's right.
They're going to use Wilson.
That's right.
So, in Alabama, he was more of an outside guy. I mean, he might do both. But I know what you mean, though. Like, they are very different types of players, even though they play the same position.
Who's got the better running backs, Patriots or Dolphins? We just went through the Patriots. Here's the Dolphins. Chase Edmonds, Sony Michel, Raheem Mostert, Miles Gaskin, Salvan Ahmed. I think it might be the Dolphins.
It's very close. I like Edmonds a lot. I think Damian Harris, though, is like a very underrated running back. So I might give the slight edge to New England, actually. I'll go slight edge to New England, okay. But it's close. It's close.
Raekwon Davis and Christian Wilkins on their defensive line.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty close there with the Patriots.
Are the Jets better at any position than the Bills?
What
we're starting to do here, and this is coming to my mind too, because today it's a soccer thing. Premier League, they're doing like their all Premier League team. And it's funny because you look at the all Premier League team, it's literally half Liverpool and half Manchester City. Like there's like two other players. And as we're doing this exercise, I'm thinking about like that graphic in my head that I saw today at the Premier League. All right, if we did that in the AFC East, and like this would take a longer time to do. We don't have time to do it now. But this exercise is kind of proving that if you did an all AFC East team right now, would almost all of them be Bills?
Almost all of them.
Like, almost all of them would be Bills. There might not be a single Jet. There might be one or two Dolphins. And there might be one or two Patriots.
And who would you get? Jets, Elijah Vera Tucker, maybe? I don't know. Did he have a really good rookie year? I'm not sure, maybe.
Would Mekhi Becton be the best left tackle?
Yeah, but no, because there's questions about his future even in New York.
That's right. Maybe Breece
they
Hall.
They do have a really interesting receiver group. Corey Davis, Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, who I know you like a lot.
I love Elijah Moore, yeah.
Yep.
But would he make? Would he be one of the top three receivers in the division? I don't think he's
don't
over.
Know.
He's not over Diggs or Tyreek Hill. And it's him versus Waddle. Waddle was better in his rookie year.
They might have the best. They might get the punt return, kick return guy, Braxton Berrios. Maybe they get him.
Listen, when the drought Bills probably had the best return man in the AFC East for a long time. Like you're not in great shape when the only guy you get in your division for that type of team is a returner.
I tweeted it out at Extra Point WGR. If you want to take a look at that Patriots depth chart, just do yourself a favor, folks. Go look at the depth chart for the Patriots and compare it to what you think for the Bills roster.
I'm going to start to build out a little all AFC East team here,
too.
There
you go. All
right. I want to figure it out.
That'll be our next week. We'll do a show next week on it.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up with the two of us, and then Sal will take over solo from 1 to 3. That's coming up here in the Extra Point Show on WGR. Did you stay up for the Battle of Alberta last night?
Didn't see the overtime goal.
Ooh.
Saw the stuff before that. Maybe, Matt, I wanted to talk about the disallowed goal with you, but we don't have time, but...
Real quick, it
should have been a goal.
I have like two differing opinions here. One is the way the NHL calls it. The way the NHL calls it, that should have 1,000% been a goal. But by the letter of the law, kicking motion, I'm like, yeah, he kicked it. He knew what he was doing.
I believe the kicking motion occurred after it hit his skate. I think he directed it in, which is legal.
Is it?
And then after that, he kind of followed through with a kicking motion after it was off his skate.
So just half a kicking motion, like just a follow through?
So there was a kicking motion, but I don't think he kicked it to push it in.
You know how you solve this? Just let it count, all of them.
Right.
All of them. Who cares
let
if they kick
it
in?
Yeah, that's right.
It's not more beneficial. It's not easier to kick it into the net.
That's right.
Remember they disallowed that Andrew Shaw playoff goal a couple years ago that he headed in? Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
We're not counting that?
Come on.
Hockey. Just more. All the goals you want to allow. All of them. Throw it into the net. Maybe that's too far. You can't throw it into the net.
No.
But I would count them. Just count them. Especially when it's close.
I always thought it was weird, too. You can't close your hand on it even if you just put it down. You know what I mean?
If it's laying on the ice.
Like if the puck's in the air, you can't have a closed fist on it. Which I get, but it was always, okay, just grab it and put it down, right?
There's so many dumb rules in hockey. They're so subjective that just whatever. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio here in the Extra Point. What do you got coming up the next couple
hours?
I have
Matt Parrino joining me here in just a moment. And then Brayden's going to come in here and he's going to explain everybody what happened yesterday. The Memorandum of Understanding was approved by Erie County for the new Bills Stadium. He's going to do that at 1:30. So you want to be listening in for that to kind of get up to speed on what's happening with the new stadium. Vinny Bond Sr. covers the Raiders. Kaepernick, workout. Going to talk with him. At 2:00, I kind of like this theme we're going on with the AFC East and the Bills and the Dolphins too. So we'll get into that. And I have an NBA question for people. I have an NBA question for people because I am a general NBA observer. I'm not like into the weeds of all these teams, and I'm gonna ask an NBA question on the show today.
All right. Sounds good. Stay tuned for that. Sal Capaccio's got the rest of the Extra Point Show for the next 2 hours. 803-0550 is the phone number to get involved. And you'll hear me a little bit later on with Mike Shope on the afternoon show starting at 3 here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.